Hello, everybody. I hope this is the last week that I have to rush from Minyan, because I should think after Pesach we will have the Plag Shir, the Mincha, the Plag HaMincha, the early Mincha times. So I'll be able to go to that and make it back in plenty of time. Rush back from Shul. Okay. So our topic today is Pesach in Tanakh. Right? Because the Pesach story is easily the most celebrated of all the holidays in the Torah as far as the Tanakh mentions. Okay, Sukkot is celebrated once in Sefer Nehemiah. Right? When I mean celebrated, of course, it was celebrated every year. It's just that the prophets don't refer to it. Right? There's no story in Sefer Shmuel of Bnei Israel sitting in Sukkot. Right? But there are stories in the VM of Bnei Israel keeping Pesach. Right? So here are the places where it's mentioned. One, of course, in Shmos, where it first took place. And I don't just mean a reference to Pesach or a reference to Yetzias Mitzrayim. The prophets do that all the time. I'm talking about a story that says, and the Jews kept Pesach. They made the Korban Pesach. They ate matzahs. They ate maror. Okay, that's what I'm talking about. Okay, so the first one is in Shmos, Perek Yudbeis. The second one is in Bamidbar, Perek Tes, in the desert. One year they offered the Korban Pesach. And there was a question about what happens if someone is impure at the time of the offering of the Korban Pesach, and that's known as Pesach Sheni, so that's two. Three is immediately upon arriving into the shores of Israel. Today is the anniversary of the day that we entered the land of Israel, which is, today was the 10th of Nisan. So on that if 33 days after Moshe died, they entered the land of Israel. And the description immediately upon arriving in Israel was that Yehoshua circumcised the men in order to prepare them for the eating of the Korban Pesach. Why does it have to say that? Because apparently, as is hinted many times in the Torah, Rashi mentions this four or five times, that the 40 years in the desert, Bnei Israel did not circumcise the boys because it was dangerous. Okay? One tribe was circumcised in the desert, at least according to Rashi, because it says about regarding this tribe, the es brischa yintzoru, they observed your bris, which Rashi takes to mean this tribe, Levi, circumcised the boys in the desert. Rashi even hints at the fact that that's part of the explanation for why the tribe of Levi was much less numerous than all the other tribes. One, Rashi says in the beginning of Shmos, because the bracha of Cain Yirbeh, the Cain Yifrotz, was only on those who were subjugated in Egypt. If Levi wasn't subjugated, they didn't have the bracha of, right, Kasher Ya'anu Oso Cain Yirbeh V'Chein Yifrotz. They didn't have any Inui, right? Okay, be that as it may, another explanation is that because it was dangerous in the desert to circumcise, they lost quite a few boys. You know, it's a strange kind of medrash that Rashi mentions, because whenever there's a sakana over doing a bris, the halacha is you're not allowed to do the bris. Not just that you don't have to, you're not allowed. Right? So the question is, what's the sakana in keeping them from making the bris? Right, if the sakana is the boy is sick, or he had an older brother who died while getting a bris, and they understood that certain blood clotting diseases went through the brothers and the family, of course you're not allowed to have a bris in such a case. And Rabbeinu Tam actually paskins in Perek Orel, made Perek and Yevamos, Rabbeinu Tam paskins that such a boy is not considered an Orel, and he may eat the Korban Pesach. It's only someone who refuses to have a bris out of spite. Not because the halacha says you shouldn't. Okay, be that as it may, if there is, however, a peripheral reason where, let's say, the Gentiles make it illegal to circumcise the boys. Throughout our history, we've faced such situations. There, I can't say it's forbidden to put yourself into the that one has to put himself into such a danger. But throughout history, we have. Okay, so anyway, that explains why Yahushua, in the third story where Pesach is observed, it says that he circumcised all the children, all the boys. And I'm going to get back to all these specifically. In the fourth case where Pesach is observed, it's the days of Chizkiyahu. The fifth case is the days of Yoshiyahu. The sixth case is in the time of Ezra. Now, I ask you to think of this. Because Sukkos is so rarely mentioned, you don't have a lot of good haftorahs for Sukkos, right? But you do have excellent haftorahs for Pesach. Pesach is observed, right? So the first day of Sukkos, the haftorah is going to be Zechariah inviting people to sit in the sukkah. Doesn't say that it was Sukkot's time. It just says, when Sukkot comes, make sure you sit in the Sukkah. Second day of Sukkot, the Haftorah tells the story of the time of Sukkot when the Beis Mikdash was completed, as will be the Haftorah of Shmini Atzeres. Okay, these are stories that took place at that time of the year, as it says inside. But it doesn't say that they observed Sukkot. Okay? But there are two stories in the Nevi'im that tell us about the observance of Pesach. One is in Sefer Yehoshua, and now I'm leaving you with a question. One is in Sefer Melachim Bet. Who is that king? Who is the king in Melachim Bet who celebrates Pesach? Any thoughts? Who is the king in Melachim Bet? It's a trick question. Because in Divrei Hayamim, Chizkiyahu celebrates Pesach to great fanfare. It's a long, long story. But in Melachim Bet, it just in passing, just mamish, half of a pasuk, tells that Chizkiyahu kept Pesach. Right? The main story in Nevi'im, because the Haftorahs have to come from Nevi'im, is about Yoshiyahu keeping Pesach, not Chizkiyahu. So I'll try to answer this question towards the end of this year. Why is the story of Chizkiyahu keeping Pesach relegated to Divrei Hayamim, whereas the story of Yoshiyahu keeping Pesach is in Sefer Melachim, which of course makes it eligible as Haftorah? Okay. All right, so the first thing I would like to discuss is how different our observance of Pesach is already from Talmudic times than what is presented in the Torah. Okay. And the fact is, it's a Mishnah in Maseches Pesachim, Perek Tes, Mishnah Dalet, that asks this question, Ma bein Pesach Mitzrayim le Pesach Doros? What's the difference between Pesach we had in Egypt and Pesach for the generations, meaning for the future? But that's dependent on what I would just say is Torah Shebaal Peh, is on the drashas of Chazal, because in the Pshat, nowhere does the Torah say that some of the things the Mishnah says we only did that one time are not to be done in perpetuity. Adarabah, after telling us, get this, to tie up an animal 4 days before Pesach, to dab its blood on the doorposts, right? To eat with our knapsacks and our bags tied near our, situated near our chairs, with our knapsacks on our shoulders, our shoulder straps, and makelchem biyedchem, right? All these things ready to go, right? It says, l'chok l'chol l'vanecha ad olam. Torah speaks as if though these things are to be kept in perpetuity, right? But of course, we're not Karaites. We have something called halacha or keres mikra, the halacha is the defining question of what we actually do in practice is not determined straight from the biblical text without interpretation. Okay. I would like to just share one element of that first story and then move on to the other five, is that it says, Kol ben nechor lo yochal bo. Kol ben nechor lo yochal bo. Which seems to mean a nochri. Ben nechor is a nochri, and someone who's not part of your clan, not part of your tribe. Kol ben nechor lo yochal bo may not eat the Korban Pesach. And Shmuel David Lutzato, Shadal, in his commentary to Shmos, suggests that this, the meaning of this pasuk, went through a metamorphosis. It meant one thing in the Torah, and it meant another thing at the time of the Mishnah, and it may have to mean a different thing today. Let me explain. And if you would think that this is too radical, let me tell you that the Vilna Gaon does this in his commentary too. Not this particular case, but the Vilna Gaon says that originally the Azazel was just sent out into the desert, this week's parsha. But when we moved to Israel and we went to Eretz Nosheves and to Yerushalayim, you can't just send that goat out into the desert. There's a city, Malei Adumim, right next door. That goat is going to make its way. It's kachim. It's going to be a michshol if someone finds that goat and shechts it. So by the time that we moved to a place where there's yeshuv, they had to throw the goat off a cliff. Okay, it's a machlokes what the word Azazel means, but the Torah does not say outside of the meaning of that word explicitly what we do with the goat when we send it out into the desert. Right? So, and this is in the Vilna Gaon. Okay, he says, because there's no hint to the fact that you throw the goat over a cliff in the Torah, right? So what did Ben Nechor originally mean? Ben Nechor means that whoever is not born into the Jewish clan may not eat the Korban Pesach. Comes the Gemara, and this is Targum Onkelos. Kol Ben Nechor means, according to Targum Onkelos, a Jewish man who is estranged from his religion. Right? Gentile can't eat the Korban Pesach from Kol Orel or Yochal Bo. Can't eat the Korban Pesach because he's Norel. Oh, yeah, what if he's circumcised? But Kol Ben Nechor lo Yochal Bo, according to Onkelos, means a Jew who is estranged from his people and estranged from his religion. We have to fine-tune what that means, too. Well, maybe he's an Obed Avodah Zarah. Maybe he is a heretic. He's a Machal Shabbos for Hesya, Obed Avodah Zarah, whatever it may be. But he has estranged himself from his people. So according to this, the Pasuk is talking about a Jewish person who is not observant Again, I'll leave it up to a different shir to determine what is a ben nechar in this context. So the Shadal suggests that we have to reevaluate this because today there are lots of people who are estranged from their Judaism but still want to attend the Seder. Maybe we could possibly ease some of the estrangement with an invitation, right? The Rosh, after all, does show up for the Seder. So I know, but this is not just a Seder. This is to eat the Korban Pesach, right? So Shadal, I mean, it's a big Chiddush, says that originally it meant a Gentile. Then it meant, because of the Misyavnim and the Hellenists, it meant a Jew who was estranged from his Judaism. And now Shadal suggests to bring it back to its original meaning. Actually, I had meant to talk about this past Shabbos when I talked about originalism and textualism. Right? It could be a metamorphosis. Okay. I think there's a good parshanut reason to think that this called Ben Nechor is a Jew who is estranged from his Judaism. Because if it means a Gentile, right, if the Torah means a Gentile may not eat the Korban Pesach, that would be a unique mitzvah from all the mitzvahs of the Torah. Can someone just figure it out right now? If the mitzvah is a Gentile may not eat from the Korban Pesach, that would be a strange mitzvah, different than all the other 612 mitzvahs. you'll kick yourself.
Well, it doesn't apply to non-Jews. The mitzvahs are for Jews.
Right. The mitzvahs are for Jews. The Torah doesn't tell non-Jews what to do. Right? If the mitzvah was a non-Jew may not eat the Korban Pesach, then it should have been binyan nifal, not binyan pa'al. Right? Someone help me. What word should it have been in Hebrew? Kol ben nechor lo ye'ochel bo. A Gentile shall not be fed the Korban Pesach by a Jew. Then the Torah is addressing a Jew. The Kol ben nechor lo yochal bo means a non-Jew may not eat the Korban Pesach. Since when does the Torah address non-Jews? Okay? So the Torah, so it comes the Gemara to say, comes Unkelus to say, Kol ben nechor lo yochal bo means a Jew who is not observant, a Jew is an apostate, he's still a Jew. You still want to keep the mitzvahs. I'm not going to say just because you're estranged from your Judaism, then here I'm giving you treif. Of course not. He's still a Jew. Right? You can't make him a Shabbos goy. A Shabbos is a strange Jew. Anyway, so maybe Shaddal is wrong. Maybe in Pshat it's talking about a Gentile. Be that as it may, that's all I'm going to say about the first Pesach. Let's talk about the second Pesach. That's going to be the Haftorah this Shabbos morning. Such a shame. Some people have their favorite Haftorah of the whole year, including mine, is the Atzmos Yaveshos, the Dry Bones Haftorah. Second year in a row, we're not reading it. Last year, Pesach was Sunday and Monday, and there was no Shabbos Chol Hamoed. This year, Pesach is Shabbos and Sunday, and again, there's no Shabbos Chol Hamoed. Okay, so the first day of Torah, this coming Shabbos, tells the story of the entrance into the land of Israel. And it's really quite amazing because one of the functions of the Pesach story is the godless of Moshe, right? The how Moshe humbled the king of Egypt, how Moshe's greatness, right? So the Gedulat HaManhig is such an important element throughout the Pesach story, Yetzias Mitzrayim story. Moshe, of course, in his characteristic humility, pushed off his greatness, but it's still there. Please take good and careful note this coming Shabbos. The Haftorah stresses again and again how Hashem is going to be with Yehoshua just as he was with Moshe, as was stressed in Perek Aleph. So the upshot of the story of the Yetzias Mitzrayim is Ve'aminu b'Hashem uvo Moshe avdo, and even up all the way up to the very last pasuk in the Haftorah, which is the fact that Yehoshua was made great in the eyes of the people by crossing, by splitting the Yarden and having them cross over. Okay, what's the connection to Pesach? Is that towards the beginning of the Haftorah, we are told that Yehoshua circumcised the people, Shenis, a second time. Pshat and Shenis is that Rashi says that right after they left Egypt, Moshe circumcised everybody, expecting that they're entering the land right away. But when they were decreed to spend 40 years in the desert, they stopped doing Bris Mila in the desert. So Yehoshua had to circumcise them a second time. Okay. All right. So Radak says Shenius means that he did so numerous times that they had to have large groups numerous times to circumcise everybody. Okay. Ravenel says that Avraham was the first time there was a mass circumcision, and this was the second time. This seems to be very different than Rashi. Rashi says that there was a second time when they first left Egypt. This would be the third time, right? Okay. So the connection in both the stories of the actual redemption and the story of the Haftorah of Yehoshua is that there is a connection between Bris Mila and Korban Pesach, as we know, of course, that they are two positive commands that carry an iser kares, a punishment. Usually there's no punishment for not doing a positive command. The punishments are for violating negative commands. So Kamash Malan, the connection between Bris and Korban Pesach is that Korban Pesach and Pesach, as Ibn Ezra says, if someone eats chametz on Pesach, he is denying Yetzias Mitzrayim. He is denying the events that we experienced and how crucial it is to actually act out and have ritualistic reenactments in order to keep remembrance alive. Okay. So it says in Av Torah that Yoshua had a mass circumcision, and it says, Kisham galosi es cherpas Mitzrayim. With this, I have revealed the abomination of Egypt. And that's why they named the city Gilgal, from Gala. Gila. So the place was Gilgal, and that's where they set up the Ohel Moed. Okay. The question is, what is the cherpa of Egypt that was revealed, that was undone? So one answer is, maybe you've heard, there's a medrash that says that Paro prohibited circumcision to the Israelites. Anybody can think of a svara? Why did Paro prohibit circumcision to the Israelites? What's the svara? So on one level, you might want to say, yeah, anybody? Paro just didn't want to let us do our mitzvahs. Right? Know what happened to someone in right? So I see the statement about killing the boys. That was a situation that lasted just a few years, possibly even only 1 year. Right? It was not a situation that confronted Aharon, right? And it's not quite clear how long it lasted after Moshe was born, but if this medrash is correct, that the Egyptians did not allow us to circumcise our boys, so when we left Egypt and we had a mass circumcision, now I understand why we're calling that undoing the abomination of the Egyptians. I think it's more likely, though, that circumcision was at that time an Egyptian ritual. We see many representations and recreations of mass circumcisions in Egypt. There are reliefs on walls and carvings of mass circumcisions. What's interesting is that it's done to adult males, not to babies, right? So it might have been that we're not going to let these lowly Hebrews circumcise their males. Circumcision is only for Egyptians. So when the Jews left Egypt, they were allowed to circumcise. So that explains the cherpa of the Egyptians that was revealed. It's interesting. Can you think of a name, a story in Bereishis where the word cherpa is connected to Bris Mila? Does it ring a bell to anybody? Where cherpa, the word cherpa, Abush and Acherpa, is connected to Bris Mila. When Yosef's brothers were confronted with the king of Shechem, right, wanting to marry Dina, and they said, the only way we'll let you do this is if you circumcise all your males, because it's a cherpa for our clan to not have to have a foreskin. Okay, it's probably so that the brothers never dreamed that they would do this. They just assumed that the response to that deal would be, "Oh, okay, I'm sorry, deal's off. You can have take your daughter back." Right? I'm going to get into too much of a tangent, but Dina was there in Shechem. What did they need the brothers for? He has the girl already. So Ramban says that she was fetching and complaining and never wanted to be with him. His request was that the brothers should convince their sister that she should love this guy and he'll take good care of her and we'll all live together. But they made it a deal, only if you give yourselves a bris. thinking that they would turn it down. When they did it, they had to go to plan B. And we all know that at least according to Yaakov, didn't work well. It wasn't a Kiddush Hashem. Okay, so that's where a mass circumcision also is connected to the word cherpa. Okay. Now, there is one additional element I'd like to conclude with for that second story. I should say the third story, because the second story is the story of Pesach Sheni in the desert, right? But I'm going to concentrate mostly on the Vayim Ksuvim. And in the Haftorah, there is a very crucial, very important pasuk that says, and it will fly right over our faces if we're not sensitive to it. It says, when they got to Israel, Yehoshua made mass circumcision. They observed Pesach. Now, there's something else that needs to be observed in Israel the second day of Pesach. Mazeh?
Counting the Omer.
Counting the Omer. And Sefer Yehoshua makes a shout out to that. Makes a shout out. Okay, now, counting the Omer is not something Yehoshua mentions per se. Doesn't mention it explicitly. But Yehoshua does mention something that the Omer comes to matir, which is, of course, the grain, the new grain. Right? Ol chadosh turns to yoshan.
Grain.
Mm-hmm. You've seen in some of the pizza stores, our pizza's made only with yoshan flour, right? So the grain that took root after the second day of Pesach in any year, in Israel, it's really not an issue because the grains are planted in the wintertime. Right? But in America, it is a problem. America is such an amber waves of grain that there is a planting of grain in the summer also, late spring and summer in this country. That whatever that produces is going to be a chadash problem next September, October, November. Okay. They used to say that grain is stored for so long in America that by the time you buy a gold medal flour in the marketplace, that flour is made from grain that grew 2 years ago, or at least a year ago. Then everything is yashan in America. Right? I'm told that's not the case. Grain is growing much more quickly, it's growing more often, and the flour is fresher. Okay, so Lemaisa, it says in Sefer Yehoshua, this is incredible, this is amazing. It says that they observed the second day of Pesach, and they were careful regarding the new grain, which is amazing. It means that they kept Chodesh and Yashan immediately. Gemara in Maseches Chon, Daf Yud Zayin, says that during the 7 years of Kibush and Chiluk, that they ate Kosle de Chaziri, they ate Bati Malay and Kol Tuv, they ate whatever they wanted. There were no kashrus laws upon them. Right? So, but they were worried of Chodesh and Yashan? Yeah. Yeah, they were. Right? Other mitzvahs like Trumas and Maestros, Shmitin and Yoblos, they did not keep right away. Shemitah, they did not keep right away. But Chodesh and Yoshan, they did. According to some others, Chala also. But Chodesh and Yoshan, apparently, because the Haftorah makes reference to it. But here's the kicker. Here is the kicker. And this one of the great proofs of Torah Shebaal Peh. Because in the Torah reading, this is for the second day of Pesach, in the Torah reading, it says, you should start counting those days, and now you can eat from the new grain. Mimocharas HaShabbos Tisperu Chamishim Yom. You should start counting those days. Now, this is what it says in the Torah. Mimocharas HaShabbos, which seems to imply the first Saturday night after Pesach. Right? This year, this great piece. Karaites and Rabbanites are keeping Shavuos this year on the same night. We're counting the Omer exactly the same. Right, because for them, Mimacharas HaShabbos is Saturday night when we're starting to count the Omer. Right, when Pesach falls on a Shabbos, the Rabbanites and the Karaites are, you know, once you know, staying on the same page. Okay, you got it. All right, so it says in Yoshua that they started eating the new grain. Mimocharas, get this, Mimocharas HaPesach. Okay. It shows that Yehoshua understood the Torah Pasuk Mimacharas HaShabbos to refer to Mimacharas HaPesach. Right? The day after the first day of Pesach. Okay, you all with me? So I have Yehoshua's interpretation of this machlokas between the Karaites and the Rabbanites, and he comes down decidedly with the Rabbanites. Okay, that Mimachar is a Shabbos means Mimachar Pesach. Of course, we are left with the question: why does the Torah just say it more explicitly? Why doesn't the Torah say Mimachar as HaPesach? Why say Mimachar as a Shabbos? So I don't have to give you a definitive answer, but I would like to give you an answer, okay? Pesach is called Shabbos because it, like Yom Kippur, which is also called a Shabbos, takes over Shabbos if they coincide. Can you explain what I mean by that?
Repeat that.
Pesach and Yom Kippur, which are called Shabbos by the Torah, take over Shabbos. A function of that is, if Yom Kippur coincides with Shabbos, which one takes precedence?
You fast on Yom Kippur when it's still Mr. Shabbos. And on Pesach you do the Korban, even though it's Shabbos.
Pesach is Erev Pesach is also called Pesach. So on Erev Pesach, if it's Shabbos, should you wait till after Shabbos is over to shecht the Korban Pesach, or shecht it in the afternoon like you do every year? It's a Gemara, the Seches Pesachim, and no one knew the answer to that. Really, the Gemara wasn't looking for an answer, it was looking for a proof. Hillel was able to give a proof that Korban Pesach is Docheh Shabbos. Right? But the other holidays, which aren't called Pesach, Shabbos takes over them.
Right?
When Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbos, we don't blow shofar. When Sukkot falls on Shabbos, we don't shake lulav and esrog. Shavuos is nothing to talk about. There are no mitzvahs. But you see that now it doesn't mean that nothing is docheh Shabbos. On Shabbos, you bring korbanos. What I'm just saying is that there's this dichotomy between two mitzvahs where they sort of, you know, take over Shabbos, Pesach and Yom Kippur, while Rosh Hashanah and Sukkot take a backseat. Okay, so I think that, so we have these three elements of the Haftorah. Of course, the Pesach observance and connection to Bris is one. Two, the Gedula of Yahushua, comparable to the Gedula of Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay. And this great proof to say that Mimacharas HaPesach should be understood the way the Chazal understood it, not the way that the Karaites understand it. I'm not in the habit of defending Karaites, but how do they deal with this pasuk in Yehoshua? It says Mimacharas HaPesach. They ate from the new grain. The fact is that this terminology, Mimacharas HaPesach, appears one other time in the Tanakh. It's a real genius point if you can get it. I'll give you a hint. It's in Parshas Maaseh. Parshas Maaseh reviews all of the journeys of the Israelites in the desert. And it says that when they left Egypt and took their first journey, the Egyptians were burying their dead Mimacharas HaPesach. Now, what day was that?
Sunday.
Isn't that the 70? Isn't that the
date?
The date would be the 23rd.
They waited to the 23rd. Why were they burying so many dead in Egypt?
Not the dead from the sea. You mean the dead from, they were burying them overnight on the 15th.
Yes. And it says so. It says the Jews were marching out of Egypt while the Egyptians were burying their dead, the firstborn. Right? And it says they were burying their dead mimocharos ha-Pesach, which apparently means a multiple thing. Could mean a few things. Mocharos ha-Pesach can mean the morning after you bring the Korban Pesach. Mocharos ha-Pesach, according to Yehoshua, is the second day, isn't it, right? You see, we have Torah Shabbat Pes, so when it seems in the Torah Shabbat Pes that you're counting 50 days, right?
No, Rabbi Schwartz, the on Israel must have been 600,000 people, right? How could they have gone in one day out?
How could there's a pretty good scene like that in the movie The Ten Commandments. They did that in a few hours. I don't know. How can so many people make their way out? I don't know. It happens. You have a football field and 120,000 people make their way out in an hour. I don't know.
Okay. It was a big area.
All right. So we see that in defense of the Karaites, if you will, Mimocharos ha-Pesach can mean a few different things, maybe. Okay, let's move on to the third story, which is Chizkiyahu. And this is interesting. This is the question I posed to you before. Chizkiyahu's story is not in Nevi'im. It's in Divrei HaYamim, which is why the Haftorah of the second day of Pesach skips over him in his story. His story is, if you have the sources I sent out to you, his story is much longer than Yoshiyahu's story. Yoshiyahu's story of observance of Pesach is just a few psukim, five or six psukim. The bulk of that Haftorah is the tshuva movement that Yoshiyahu enacted. Right? That's Yoshiyahu. Chizkiyahu's also, because Chizkiyahu's father, Achaz, was a terrible, terrible king. He brought in such a shame onto the Beis HaMikdash. Cleared out the Azara to make it look like an Aramean temple. His Kohen Gadol, Uriah HaKohen, was a real Russia. Do you see a trend here? Right? Is that Pesach seems to be observed in Tanakh as part of tshuva movements. Right? Returns. Remembering a promise of the past. That's our first Pesach, is remembering a promise Hashem made to Abraham. Right? Yeshua, we're finally returning. We're finally doing what we should have been doing 40 years ago. And Chizkiyahu and Yoshiyahu. And Ezra too. Ezra's the big return. Shivas Tzion. So along with those elements comes this there's a desire to keep Pesach. Not so much Sukkot. Sukkot doesn't entail this element of return, which is an interesting thing because in America, the most commonly observed ritual of Jews in America, right, in numerous studies over the years, the most commonly observed ritual is the Seder. Okay. Some people who even eat on Yom Kippur are going to have a Seder. Right? I think a close second is to light a menorah, maybe, but be that as it may, the observance of Pesach is a jolt. Right? It comes along with tshuva movements. But I return to the question I asked before. Why is the story of Chizkiyahu not in Nevi'im? And we could have laid a third Haftorah for Pesach. Instead, we have to read from Yoshua, and we read about the story of Yoshiyahu. again, which is much shorter than the story of Chizkiyahu. Okay. So I take you to a Gemara in Sanhedrin of Tzadik Daled Amud Beis that says, from dawn to Be'er Sheva, Chizkiyahu taught Torah to every boy and girl, even at Kachim and Taros. Look, Chizkiyahu's name is mentioned in Sefer Mishlei. Gam Eile Mishlei Shlomo Asher Atiku Chizkiyahu Vanashav Per Kafei Pasuk Aleph. And in fact, the Gemara in Bava Basra, Daf Yudaled Amud Beis, claims that Chizkiyahu wrote Shir HaShirim, Mishlei, and Koheles. Even though we all know that Shlomo wrote them, but Chizkiyahu edited them and gave them their final form. Right? Chizkiyahu was a great machshir l'tshuva, and I would like to suggest, of course, this is relying on Drash, that the story involving Chizkiyahu, it's quite questionable. Now, there's two ways out for his question, because it says that he made the Jews, or he paskined for them, if you will, that they could put off the observance of Pesach for a month. And you're going to say, isn't that what our second story was about? Pesach Sheni? That you're allowed to do such a thing? Right? So there are two ways for us to consider why or how Chizkiyahu kept Pesach a month later than expected. Can you start to think of them, please? One we're, of course, in right now. That's why the Minigat Congregation of Tzedek. That is the correct answer, Jeff, yes. And that's exactly what the Gemara says in Maseches Rosh Hashanah and in Maseches Sanhedrin, both in the first Perek, that he added a month to the calendar. He made it a Shnas Mil Beres. Because if you do what the Muslims do with Ramadan, after 4 or 5 years, Pesach is going to be in February. Right? We have to make sure that the solar calendar and the lunar calendar, Shmatos Moadaya Hazos Lamoadam Yamim Yamima, it should be year end to year end over an average of time. Right? Because we need, precisely because of what I said before, we need to bring a barley offering on the second day. And if barley isn't growing because it's the middle of February or the middle of March, of course we can't observe the holiday. We can't bring the Minchas Omer. And I know the Gemara Menachos says you can bring the barley from another country, but still, we want to make sure that barley is growing. So they have these meetings, you know, and periodically every year to see, do we need a leap year because the roads aren't tried? You know, the Gemara is talk about the reasons that they might come up with for acquiring a leap year. So either because they added a month, that's why we say l'chaparas pasha in our shul. Because maybe Purim was supposed to be Pesach. Purim, this past Purim, the 14th of Adar was really the 14th of Nisan because we didn't need an extra month. No, it was still cold in Israel. It almost snowed then, remember? So we got it right. We got it right. We added the month for a right reason. But not always. Don't you remember some years when March was much warmer than April? Or February was warmer than March. You know, the sun sometimes behaves erratically, right? And for terms of the weather, we could have had Pesach early, right? So there are two options. One is what Jeff just said, which is that he added another Adar. But here's the Gemara says was his problem. He added it too late. He added a month after it was already Nisan. Okay. That's too late. Right? The other obvious point is Pesach Sheni. Right? You ever hear that there are six things that Chizkiyahu did? Three he got right, three he got wrong. And Yeshayahu refers to the messianic name. He says, Pele Yoetz Aviad El Gibor Asar Shalom. Pele Yoetz means the person who gives wondrous advice. And Taka, it says, and what I cut out for you from Divrei Yomim, it says, Ve'yiva'atz. Chizkiyahu gave Eitzah. He had a meeting with lots of important dignitaries to determine, do we need another month because everybody's tamei? Now, this is where he got things wrong, according to the Gemara, because when everybody's tamei, what do you do?
If everybody's tamei, then you don't have to pay attention to the rules.
You don't have to pay attention to the rules of tumah. You don't make it in the second month. The second month is for individuals who are tamei. But if the majority of the nation is tamei, yeah, finish my sentence. When do they all do Korban Pesach?
On the regular time.
The regular time in Nisan. Okay. It's only if Pesach has to be postponed because the majority of the nation, and the Gemara in the 8th parak and 7th parak talks about how to reckon, how to know what's considered the majority of the nation, who is included to make that majority. But the Maisa, this is a second possibility for how Chizkiyahu might have kept the holiday in that second month. Okay, for one reason or the other. All right, so this is Pesach in Tanakh. So, okay, it's Divrei Yamim. But now we have this beautiful story in Sefer Melachim, Perek Chaf Gimel of Sefer Melachim Bet. Even though God had already predicted twice, once to Chizkiyahu, when he showed off his treasures to the Babylonian delegation, God told him, these same Babylonians, the descendants of these people, are going to walk off with those treasures one day in the future, because they're going to sack this city and wipe it out. And then again, some years later, Chizkiyahu's son made such a trespass against the Torah. Hashem just said, I've had it. So then you can ask, so what was Yirmiyahu's mission? What was the attempt to save something that was inevitable? The answer to that is nothing is ever inevitable. Tshuva is always on the table, even for a gzera that's been passed. So Yoshiyahu in Perek Chaf Gimel initiates a tshuva movement that is so profound, it gets everybody keeping the mitzvahs, it gets everybody wanting to learn more about the Torah that they had that gone profoundly forgotten. And in that Torah that was found, they see there's some intricacies and details about keeping the holiday called Pesach. And his observance as such, it says that they did not have such a Pesach in Israel since the time of the Shoftim. That's what it says in Melachim and the Haftorah. And in Divrei Hayamim, it says they did not have such a Pesach since the times of Shmuel Hanavi. Is that a stira? Is that a contradiction? The answer is no. Shmuel is Shoftim. He's the last of the Shoftim. So if you're going to say they didn't have a Pesach like this since the time of the Shoftim, it's fair game to mention the last one.
Yeah, he was a Shoftim, right.
That's it. That's parenthetically, if you recall, we've done this before, why he got so angry when it says, Vayerabe enei Shmuel kasher sha'al ha'am tzna lanu melech lishofteinu. Get it? Personal patch.
To judge. Who am I? What am I? Chicken soup?
Chop liver. Hey, tell me, you to give us a, you know, say tzna lanu melech l'malcheinu, you know, to give us a king to be king over us. Ramban says that that's what angered Shmuel. It says in the pasuk, "Vayirabei neishmuel kasher shalom tznalanu melech shavtein." Finally, Ezra, the sixth case. So we have six so far, right? Shmos Yud Beis, Bamidbates, Yoshua Hey, right? Chizkiyahu, I'm going in order of the history, in Divrei Yamin. Then Yoshiyahu and Melachim Bet Perach of Gimel. Finally, Ezra, at the time of Shivas Tzion. So we've come full circle since the observance of the first Pesach. Okay? We've come full circle. This is what we do when we come to our redemption. We keep Pesach. To be sure, to be perfectly fair and frank, it says in Sefer Ezra that they kept Sukkot also. But all right, there's a separate reason for that. It's interesting that in Tanakh it says that they didn't keep a Pesach like this since the time of Shmuel. And in Ezra it says they didn't keep a Sukkot like that since the time of... Anyone with Bakiyas in Ezra? They didn't keep a Sukkot like that since the time of Yehoshua.
Yehoshua.
Yep. In the time of Yehoshua. So there, the Radak discusses, and I have a paper, Das Sofrim, that discusses why does Ezra go further back regarding Sukkot. Right? Sukkot is certainly also definitely appropriate to a time of a returning exile. Because after all, Sukkot is an exile from your home. Right? Pesach, we change what we eat. On Sukkot, we change where we eat it. Okay? So Yehoshua, who's the one who brought us in from the exile, you can imagine that from that time, there was a great Sukkot. You know, now we're finally coming to our home, to a Diras Keva. So when Ezra brings the people back, so they connect to that first that Sukkot in the time of Yehoshua. Okay, so I just tell you that there are three sources beyond Tanakh for Bayis Sheni that refer to a mass observance of Pesach. Okay, one is a 6th century. Small little description of the observance of Pesach and a shifcha, seems to be a shifcha, a handmaiden, putting together instructions about Pesach preparations. It's very interesting. Okay. And the second one is called Igeres Hananya, which is fascinating, really fascinating. It's a description of Jewish observance of Pesach in the 4th century and how Persian Jewish soldiers were given off the time for the first day to celebrate the Chag and were granted special food without chametz during the Chag. Right? This letter was presented in Austria, where Jews were serving in the Austro-Hungarian Empire's army. So they were also granted special eating accommodations for Pesach. Okay, and then more famously for scholars is Sefer HaYovlin, the Book of Jubilees. Right, it's probably the oldest reference to eating the Korban Pesach with wine. It says if you drink Korban Pesach with wine and with Hallel and singing. Doesn't mention anything about Seder, but that's what's written in the Book of Jubilees. Okay, that's your history. That's a history lesson of Pesach. Maybe some other time we can do history, have a Haggadah comes about. But I'm giving a shiur over Pesach, the first days of Pesach, a bit of a chiddush, that the idea of the four sons actually emanates from Kotomar Lebeis Yaakov Visaged Livnei Yisrael. With the Sagid of Israel, like the word Haggadah, there's a Gemara in Masechta Shabbos and Perek Amar Bikiva that lists four different ways to teach students based on this pasuk. And if you want to see how they correspond to the four sons, take a look at the introduction to my Haggadah, Two Nights in a Row, I'm making a shameless plug. That's called the Four Sons Haggadah. Okay, everybody, we're going to have Minchas Chinuch in about 10 minutes or so. Good night, everybody.
Yeah, Rabbi Schwartz, when Seder Pesach was introduced, when was it?
When it took a look, it evolved over time, not all one at one time.
Aha. Uh-huh.
It's so evolved. The Sifrei, they're using sources that are numerous.
Because now it is as a whole Seder looks very solid, but it could not be immediately.
Yeah, in the Talmud, there's a Machlokas Rav and Shmuel about certain things to say. Yeah, it's
okay.
These are, yeah.